Well, welcome to Tuesday's edition of Addicted to Faith, the Last Storyteller podcast. Joining me tonight is the author of two books, Surviving the Nightmare and Living Without Fear. These are biographical in nature. The author's name is Lily Tesla, and she's coming to us this evening all the way from the great state of New York. Welcome to Texas, Lily. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
You betcha. Now, your book, Surviving the Nightmare, came out in 2024, and then you came out this year with Living Without Fear. These are two stories about your life and what you went through. Tell us about, I want you to tell us about the stories, but tell us what made you sit down and write stories that really, that reveals a lot of very personal things in your life.
Well, I started doing it as a way to explain to my kids why I stayed so long. I stayed in a domestic violence marriage for 30 years, two husbands, and I just really wanted my kids to understand it's not as easy as everybody says, oh, just leave. It's not that easy. So I wanted them to understand and get to know me better as a person, as opposed to just mom. So that's how it started. And then I had, as I got out of the relationship and people started knowing my story, they were like, you know, you really should write it down because it's totally unbelievable. So I did. And I published, and I've gotten a lot of good responses on it. I've been out 10 years now. I actually also hold domestic violence work groups, awareness, that type of thing to my local community. I'm going to show you, I don't know if I'll be on video, but here's what my book looks like. And it's a picture of me and my little Pomeranian. So Surviving the Nightmare is how I endured 30 years of domestic violence. My first husband was extremely abusive. We were only married a short period of time because he ended up going to prison for murder. And I went looking for him and found the body. So that was its own little nightmare in itself. It was in a bar. I went looking for him because in my delusional state, he would usually abuse me a lot when he was drinking. When he was sober, he was a good man. Get a couple of beers in him, whole different story. So he was on a 4-day drinking binge one night. And I was like, you know, I got to go find him because I know the beating that I'm going to endure. I just wanted to get it done and over with. So I went to go find him. Went to the local bar, which was your old type mom and pop type bar. A lot of elderly men went to this bar. And instead of finding my husband, I found a dead guy. And it ended up being a man that him and a buddy of his, he was convicted of murder, basically. They never determined which one did it. They just said both men were there. They got the same sentence.
How young were you then?
I was only 22.
So just old
21.
Enough.
I take that back. 21.
Just barely old enough to even get into a bar.
Right.
And you experienced that.
Yeah. Yeah. And at first I didn't believe it. You know, I had been in a lot of bars because he was an alcoholic, and I went over by the bathroom and the man was laying there on the floor. Well, I thought he fell asleep because I've been in bars where men fall asleep at the bar stoop with their head hanging down asleep. And I looked over and saw blood and realized, no, he's dead. Ran out the bar. Coincidentally, cop happened to be pulling, you know, turning the corner, and I flagged him down, and that's how that played out.
Did you suspect your husband had something to do with it?
I did not at first. I just knew that he wasn't home and I needed to find him. I dropped off my daughter at the time, was only a couple of months old. She was maybe 6 months old at the time. Dropped her off at my friend's house, and I had to go find him. I didn't expect to find what I found, but found out later on that he was there that night, him and his buddy, and that's what transpired. Fast forward another year, year and a half, I met another man who ended up being my second husband, my son's father. He wasn't abusive in the beginning. In the beginning, it was all, let me take care of you, started buying me things. I'm a single mom. I'm working. I'm trying to support myself. And I liked the attention. And then the abuse started. And I stayed with that man for 30 years. It was tough. It was tough.
Were there signs of something changing in him?
There was, and I totally ignored it. It's like in my head, I knew better, but I really didn't look at it. Like, I'll give you an example. I had wedding pictures that I was saving from my first marriage for my daughter. Well, he went and found any pictures that I had of that, my previous life, and he took a black magic marker and X'd out the guy's face, which was my first husband's. You know, he started cutting up pictures. He wasn't hitting me at that point, and I just overlooked it. He started then becoming controlling, who I could talk to, who I couldn't talk to, stuff like that. And I took it as, oh, he loves me. I was oblivious. Again, at this time, I was 22. Yeah, and like I said, I stayed with him. I wanted more children. I love children. I've been raising kids since I was 12 years old. So that's, I saw myself with a large family. I raised my siblings. I ended up raising my ex-husband's brothers and sisters, nieces and nephews, rather. You know, so at one point, I had 12 kids living with me in a three-bedroom apartment, being abused, but yet I took care of the kids, you know. We tried to keep things behind closed doors so they didn't realize what was going on. They know now, obviously. But yeah, it was tough. I left a few times, but I always went back. One of the times that I had left, I changed my mind and decided to go back. And the woman's shelter actually told me, you know what? Don't ever call us again. We're done. We're not going to help you. If you go back, this is it. And I was told that from the woman's domestic violence shelter, from the courts, because, you know, I was trying to petition him to, you know, for custody of the kids and stuff. And even they told me, you know what? If you go back and you stay, don't pursue it again.
Do you
So.
think that's a way that they were trying to persuade you, or have they seen enough women cry wolf?
That's what I think it was in my, you know, my heart of hearts. I felt that, you know, they just didn't want to be bothered. Well, if you're not going to help yourself, we're not going to help you, type of deal. So I stayed, you know, and it was mainly because my boys at the time, they were little. They were like, I want to say 7 and 4 or 3, and they were crying. They wanted their dad. My daughter at the time, she was older. She was 17. He wasn't her biological father. And she kept begging me, Mom, please don't go back. Don't go back. But I'm like, you're on your way out the door. You're going to be graduating high school. You're leaving the nest. I got these two little boys that want their father. What am I supposed to do? Was kind of how I felt. So I went back. I didn't leave for good until my youngest was 14. My middle one was 19. And my daughter, she was growing and out the house. She was in her early 20s.
You stayed around a long time.
I did.
And I
I
think
did.
a lot of your book is about that, and the reasons why a woman in your predicament makes that choice. Was he ever, husband number two, was he ever abusive to your daughter or to the boys?
No, just to me.
And I take it when the boys were young, they had not witnessed that.
No, because when he would quote unquote hit me, whatever, it was usually when they were sleeping or when we're in our bedroom and the door is closed. You know, They knew, because afterwards they would either see the bruises or me crying or whatever. And whatever little bit they did see, I did explain to them that this behavior is not normal because I didn't want them to repeat the cycle. So I would take them aside and say, hey, the way he acts, I'm sorry, but that's not how a man is supposed to act, that type of deal. I even went and got my boys involved in Big Brothers, Big Sisters so that they could see what a normal relationship is supposed to be like. I got them involved in Boy Scouts. Like, I tried my best that even though I was living with it, to show them that not everybody goes through that. Another reason why I stayed so long was because of my religious beliefs. I was raised in a Catholic school. My father was Catholic, my mother was Methodist. And so I had Catholic education during the week, and on the weekends, it was Methodist Protestant church. And I had to go to Sunday school and that whole bit. So I was raised, you stand by your man, you work through your relationship, whatever. So that's what I did. It wasn't until, now mind you, this man, my second husband, he stole from me, stole from my family. He was addicted to drugs, an alcoholic, all that. And I stayed through all that, through the stealing and the me begging food pantries for food, the whole nine yards. But when he cheated, something in me snapped. And my youngest is the one that he went and got his other siblings together and was like, listen, we got to get mom out. This isn't fair. And when the three of them basically held an intervention on me, I kind of got the courage to, pack up his stuff and tell him, listen, you got another girl now. You go to her. Here's your stuff. I packed up his bags and sent him on his way. And
And
luckily, he left.
you paid for that, right?
I paid the entire relocation cost, the whole bit. And how they say a woman's intuition is never wrong? It's not wrong. I started having doubts that he was cheating on me. And I was like, you know what? Let me investigate, So I hacked into his emails. I hacked into his phone. I hacked into everything. I took printouts of conversations and inappropriate, naked pictures back and forth between him and this girl, printed everything out, and I made a file. And I worked from home at the time. I had a locked file cabinet in my office, and that's where I kept said file until I had to wait for the right opportunity to throw it in his face, basically. So, girlfriend of mine, I lost a ton of weight. I was at one point 450 pounds.
Oh my.
I got down to, I had a gastric bypass. I got down to a little under 200 pounds, and I was getting ready to go have all that excess skin removed. So, my girlfriend decided to treat me to a cruise. I was like, you know what? These kids are getting older. One was 14, the other one was 19 that was still home. I want to go. I'm going to go. So I told them, I was like, too bad, so sad. I'm going, and this is what's happening. You're going to be a dad, and you're going to watch the kids for 2 weeks. It's not going to kill you, I promise. You can do this, And I went, and when I came back, I knew the affair was happening. I found out in November. I went on my cruise in February. So I knew, and I had to keep that bottled up and act like I didn't know nothing. Meanwhile, I'm gathering more and more proof to add to the file. I come back from my cruise, and this was the moment that I loved. He was like, oh, we got to talk. We got to talk. And I'm like, okay. And I was putting him off because honestly, I really didn't want to have the conversation. I'm not good with confrontation, but I knew I had to do it. Kids went to bed. And I was like, all right, hold on, let me get something out of my office. Went in my office, grabbed the file, I put it down on the coffee table, and I was like, here you go. And he's like, what's that? And I said, open it up, take a look. And he was flabbergasted. He was like, you knew? I've been with you for 30 years. I know you better than you know yourself. Of course I knew. And we had the conversation. I was like, you need to go. I'm done. I'm done. I'm not dealing with this. You need to go and live with her. And he fought me a little bit, but he eventually went and the kids stood behind me and was like, we don't want you here. Go be with the other girl. So at one point she left. She moved to Florida, to the state of Florida. I live in New York. He wanted to go follow her. but he didn't. Meanwhile, he had lost his job because he was bringing his temper to the workplace, and they finally got fed up with it and they fired him. And it was a damn good job too. So anyway, he's sitting on the couch one day in my house because he ended up moving back. He lived with her until she moved. Then he moved back with me and basically told me, "This is my house too. You ain't got no choice. I'm living here. My name is on the mortgage. Too bad, so sad. You're gonna have to deal with me," type deal. Said, "Okay." So he's telling her on the phone one day, "Oh, I love you," and all this and that. Something in me snapped, and I got fed up, and I said it as loud can be, so she could hear me on the phone. And I said, "You know what? He says he loves you. However, whose house is he in? Whose couch is he sitting on? Mine. I've told him to leave. I've told him to go to you. He won't." And I was like, "I've even offered to pay for the flight." So because he was put on the spot, he was like, "Fine, book the flight." So that's what I did. I bounced my credit card, meaning that the bank will charge you overdrafts and all that, but I didn't care. He needed to go. So paid for the flight. And it was like maybe 2 or 3 weeks later. And in that meantime, I found him a job down there. I found an apartment. And I was like, "You gotta go. You gotta go. I can't live like this anymore." However, in those few weeks before he was leaving, the abuse escalated very badly. It was to the point where he was throwing lit cigarettes at me. He was choking me every chance he got. If the kids walked in another room, he would just push me against the wall just because he felt he could. So yeah, until the day he left, he abused me up to the night before. Long story short, she left him a couple of years later. And of course, he comes crying to me. And then yet again, I found him another place to live, helped him do the, get the car insurance in his name because he was helpless. He didn't know how to do anything. I've always been the administrator. And he just kept pestering me. And it wasn't until about a year or so before he died that I couldn't get rid of him. It was constant calling me to fix something. It was always a problem, whether it be a job, insurance, some paperwork, administrative stuff. Always trying to be in my orbit. And finally, I went to my current husband and I was like, "You know what? I can't take it anymore." And I was so conditioned. I was literally afraid not to answer his phone call to where if I saw his name come up on my screen, I was afraid not to answer it. Even though logistically, I know he's several states away, but my brain would not let me not answer the phone because I was afraid I was going to get in trouble. And that's the part of the abuse that I struggled with is cutting that. They call it trauma bond that I know that's what it is now. But at the time I saw his name come across, I was like, "Oh no, I have to answer it. If not, I'm going to be in trouble."
That's the part of your story I don't think a lot of people realize. We all know people that have gone through similar situations, domestic abuse, where especially where in most cases it's the husband or the boyfriend who's physically, emotionally, even spiritually abusive. And the woman, the girl, stays, doesn't leave. And we scratch our heads and we try to figure out why don't you just leave, put an end to it. In your case, not only did you not leave right away because of the circumstances you were living in, but when he kept coming back, there was a part of you that kept helping him. Some people may say, enabling him to do those things. And I think your books carry a powerful story. And I think that if there's someone out there that read these stories because of something they were going through, or were thinking about reading the stories because of something they're going through, that they would want to know, how did you do it? How did you get to where you're sitting tonight? You have a husband, is a blessing. Your children are grown. You're helping other women through organizations to deal with these things, but you lived it. Help someone, any help me understand what is inside of a person that allows them to live through that.
Well, I know for me, I don't know if this helps make sense. I was raised, my father's military, okay? My dad was in the Air Force. And he always instilled in me to put your feelings in boxes, put everything in a compartment, and only deal with it one at a time. So I was able to do that. I was able to, I have a very good career. They did not know about my home life. Because I was able to, once I went to work, I shut my brain off to what was going on at home. And that's how I dealt with it. I went to college in secret. I wanted to go back to school to further my career. He wouldn't allow me to leave. I couldn't attend classes. That just wasn't allowed. So I said, all right, I got a computer. And they started having online colleges. So that's what I did. I got my master's degree. And he didn't even know I was in college. You know, luckily for me, he worked overnights. So I was able to do my job during the day. I literally had a schedule for like 3 or 4 years to where I worked 9 to 5. I made dinner, packed his lunch from 5 to 6. He left the house at 6:30. I'm back on the computer at 7 to go to college and did my homeworks and all that. I usually logged off the computer by 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm asleep until 6. Then I got to get the kids up for school and start the whole day all over again.
So you had a secret life.
I did.
You were living a secret life because of the life, the not secret life that was going on. Were you constantly in fear?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I never knew the eggshell thing is real. I never knew what kind of mood he was going to come home in. Everything always had to be a show. Even if we went out in public, let's say, and we went to like one time we went to New Jersey to Atlantic City with a girlfriend of mine and her husband. And he proceeded, he always acted like he was better off financially than what we were. So he always had to put on a big show, look at me type deal. I'm the life of the party. He went and took her husband. They went to a strip club and he had to show that he was, you know, ritzy titsy or whatever, and he spent our mortgage money.
Oh,
That's how he had the money to do all these things. And then after I got home, it was left up to me to figure it out. I always figured it out, but that's not the point. The point is, you know, nothing was ever about what I wanted to do. I had to follow him around like a little puppy dog. Nothing was ever for my enjoyment if we went and did anything. It was always his call, his rules, you know, he was the quote unquote the man. And here I am going behind him and taking people aside and being like, ah, I'm sorry. You know, I'm sorry for his behavior. And that's one thing that I love now about my current marriage is I don't have to apologize for him. You know, he doesn't make a jerk of himself. Like I don't have to apologize for somebody else's behavior. You know, that's the hardest part. But the fear of, I know that like logically, if I'm on the outside looking in, I'm the main breadwinner. I am the one that made the most money, paid the bills, took care of the kids, whatever. And he was just there. So logically, I didn't need him. He could have left and I could financially support us, meaning me and the kids. But I chose to stay because I was still afraid to do it without him, even though he was more of a hindrance than a help. Most of our marriage, he didn't have a job. I did everything. But yet I was still very intimidated and very like afraid to make that move because he would tell me, you're never good. I'm gonna find you, you know. So, and I didn't have the backing of the police. That was the main thing. You know, so I felt I was stuck. I would call the cops, state troopers, and they would come to my house and they wouldn't do anything. They would tell him, "Oh, can you just leave her alone, please?" And that's what they did.
Good old boys.
Yeah. And I even, after he left, okay, so after I paid for the flight and he went to Florida, I ran into one of the troopers because I was so emotionally distraught. I'm like, okay, he's gone now. I got to find a second job to support everybody. So that's what I did. I started counseling the mentally ill. It's called like a respite counselor or whatever. Not like a therapist, but just pretty much a glorified babysitter, if you will. I make sure they take their meds. I make sure everybody gets along, that type of stuff. So I was on my way to work, and at a force of habit, I know that I had to go take this one road on the right to go on the highway. Well, I forgot I don't need to go make that right. I can go straight because I'm going someplace else now. So I went to make the right on to go on the highway and then corrected myself and made the left and got off the exit. So in the cop's eyes, that was passing me, was like, what is she doing? So he pulled me over and he asked me, he goes, do you remember me? And I'm thinking, no, like, did I go to school with you? Did I, because I've lived in the same town my entire life. And he was like, no. And he told me he was one of the cops that came to my house just before my ex had left during one of the abuses. And he was like, I'm sorry. He's like, I couldn't do anything. My hands were tied. So right there, that told me that they're instructed when it's a domestic situation to not do anything, to just try to de-escalate the moment and walk away.
Did you have friends or family that you could talk to during the time that you were living with them during the darkest times? And did you reach out to them?
I had my mom. Now, my ex-husband was Puerto Rican. He was Spanish. And my mother was super prejudiced. So she wouldn't do anything because I chose to be with someone that was not white. And she never had a relationship with my kids because my kids were half Puerto Rican. So her, she was no help. I couldn't go to her for anything. My siblings at the time, they were young adults. I wasn't going to bring them into my drama. I didn't. And then I didn't have really girlfriends because I was ashamed. So I didn't want anybody to know. And the cops, they didn't make me feel like they would help me. So I stayed. I felt I was stuck.
I think the last,
I just had to make the best of it.
I think the last part of what you said applies so many times when you said, I didn't want anybody to know. You had mentioned earlier on that there were times where you had to apologize for his behavior when it would have been so much easier just to tell everybody, yeah, he's a big jerk. But that would have revealed what he was doing to you.
Right.
And you were living not only with the secret advancing of your education, but the secret abuse that you were living through too.
Yeah, there was times where, things were so rough that I had a car, okay? I had a Nissan Altima. I loved that car. But it got to a point where it was no longer working and I had to get rid of it. So he decided he was going to try to help me. He goes and buys a Jeep that's a standard, knowing I don't know how to drive. So now I'm relying on you for transportation. There's times he refused to take me to work. My job was a 5 mile walk. I think it's like 6 point something. I looked it up one time. And I would have to walk to work because he didn't want to get out of bed to take me to work. Or I didn't have the $1.50 to go get a bus. And let me tell you something. There was one time I remember I had 85 cents and I needed $1.20 for that bus. And I didn't have it. I didn't have it. And I wasn't comfortable asking somebody, hey, do you have 50 cents? So I would walk to work and it would take me 2.5 hours. And sometimes I would ask people at my job, hey, can you give me a ride home? I didn't do it a lot, but once in a while, I was tired. And they complained to my boss. My boss pulled me into a meeting and was like, "Listen, you can't ask anybody. Your coworkers are, stressed, whatever." Meanwhile, I never said anything about the abuse of what I was going through. I just asked for, and I didn't ask anybody that was taking them out of their way. I asked people that were, I would be on the way home for them. So I said, okay. So I basically had the, F it attitude with everybody at work. And I didn't talk to nobody. I didn't ask nobody. Now, mind you see me walking on the street and you offer me a ride, that's a different story. Then you can't say nothing. I didn't ask. So I did that until I was able to save up enough money to get myself another car.
You know, your husband was an alpha male,
Yes.
which isn't always a good thing. We men, we want our sons to grow up to be alphas, to be strong for the woman, for the children, not against them. And so that is not always a good thing. In your case, you found that out firsthand. But in listening to you, Lily, tonight, if I was writing a story about you, I would introduce her as one tough broad.
Oh, let me tell you now, I don't know. It's like I've come into my own. So let me go into the second book. So
Yes.
the second book is The Recovery Years, which took a lot, and my husband, thank God, now has a patience of a saint because I was a handful, especially when we first got together. Now with him, I've known him since we were 5 years old. We went to the same Catholic grammar school. So we grew up together. So I think that's part of the comfortability that we feel towards each other because, Catholic school back then, it was one grade. So you had one first grade, one second grade. It was one classroom. And there was, I think, 20 kids in our class. And most of us are still quite close, believe it or not. I've had them to my house and everything. So, P.S., I married a childhood classmate. And when we found each other again after so many years of being apart, and I was explaining to him, what was going on, he provided that listening ear. And we were together. We dated a couple of times. And he took me out on our first date. And our first date, he took me to a, he told me, just get dressed, didn't tell me where we were going. He's like, just get dressed, put on something nice, and I'll pick you up. I was all excited because I was like, oh, you're picking me up at the door? That's cool, because I got married after high school. So I never like really had that date feeling, So he picked me up, took me to a men's support group for a men's halfway house that was for alcoholics. But not only were these men alcoholics, they were also abusive to their wives. So he brought me there and I'm looking at him. I'm like, are you sure? Like, because I was afraid to like really tell my story because there was a lot I hadn't told him. And I was like, if I really open up, are you going to look at me the same? Like, are you going to change your mind and be like, you know what? She's a handful type deal. But I tell you, that first meeting that I had where I was able to like let go of all the anger and the fear, just everything to just blurt it out. And at the end of that meeting, one, I felt a huge sense of relief, like a huge weight was just like lifted. And these men were like, now they understood what it was like for their wives.
Yes.
Because I explained to them, I said, you think you're hiding stuff. We know when you're drinking. We know when you're partying. We know. We can tell by the way you look at us or the way your mannerism is. So you ain't hiding nothing. You ain't getting away with nothing. We know. We just choose not to fight about it, So they actually hugged me when we left, when I left, and appreciated my candor and my openness. And it helped them. I changed their lives as well as they helped me. So that was a good experience. It took me a long time to be able to a simple thing like sleeping and being able to fall asleep and not jump up and have to check my surroundings. And, because sleeping with my ex-husband, it was, he would wake me up like, you should not be sleeping. You should be up doing laundry or doing the dishes, or how dare you sleep, it to finally let my body relax and actually fall asleep all night, let alone sleeping next to another man. So all that it took me probably a good 6 to 8 months of living with my current husband before I was able to fall asleep comfortably and not have to be afraid anymore. So yeah, the recovery part is real. I still have certain triggers. I'll give you an example. Like, for me, my biggest trigger is tone. If you get cranky with me, or there's a tone, it could be an email that could set me off. And it takes me usually 2 or 3 days to snap out of it, because right away I seclude, I cry, I block everybody out, and it messes me up. When I was going through the thick of it and through all that, I didn't care anybody talked to me. It didn't bother me. But once I got out, and that's not something that I have to deal with on a daily basis, and it resurfaces, I can't handle it. And I still struggle with that, unfortunately. I've learned coping mechanisms. Like, if it's an email, I'll take a step away. I'll regroup. I'll take a couple of deep breaths and say, okay. I mean, there was one time my job made me so mad. I walked upstairs in my house and I was like, do I really need this job? I just want to send an email and be like, you know what? I quit. Like, but I had to rethink that because I need a job. The other thing that I've never really gotten over is driving. I don't like to drive. I don't like to be in the car, whether it's a passenger, a driver, anything, because my ex-husband used to drive and drive crazy. You know how like people will go weave in and out of traffic? He would do all that. And then even we lived on a back country road, he would turn off the headlights and drive in pitch blackness just to scare me. So I still have issues with that, and I can't get over it. I've tried. I can't. I don't drive the highway. I take the back roads everywhere. My family calls me the back road queen, because I can go my own speed. If I want to drive 20 miles an hour, I can. Can't do that on the highway. They frown upon that.
Well, Lily, if there's something not to get over, that would be the one I'd be least worried about. I'm on the highway every day, and it's a crazy world out there
Yeah.
the way people drive nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
But it is also, there's a freedom that comes with it, that because of your past has been sacrificed. That's not fair. It's not fair to you. So your new husband, he knew about you told him about your past.
Yep. And instead of, I don't know what the right word is, but instead of like ridiculing me or saying, oh, just get over it, he embraces it, and just helps me work through whatever.
Well, he showed that early on by taking you to that meeting.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was
Absolutely.
actually, I think, a big risk on his part. Because
Yeah.
you could have walked in there and turned around and walked out of his life. How dare you do something like this?
It ended up being the best thing ever,
Not
and
only for you, I think for those men in that room, right? To
absolutely.
have a woman who's been abused stand in front of men who have abused, it's got to be a powerful moment. It has to be.
Yeah.
And whether it changes them going forward, or if it just makes them realize who they are, I think it was. And your husband now, I think maybe he saw that in you. Let her tell her message, because I know these guys, and guys sit around and they talk about guys. And I remember years and years and years ago hearing guys talk about, actually almost pridefully, that he put her in her place.
Yeah.
And it was like everybody thought, oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool, because we're a bunch of guys standing around listening to this. It's a very sad world that when women have to go through that the way you did, that there's no support. You were actually turned away in seeking support because they thought that you weren't being helping yourself. Being in a situation when you had children and being a single mom would have been a big, big decision to make. Even though you were the breadwinner at the time, all of a sudden being a single mom, it's all on you. There's no hope of anything else.
You know, but even when he was home, even though he wasn't working, the kids still only went to me for stuff. You know, even when they got older and they moved out of the house, it was still before he died, it was still constantly, well, I'll call mom, you know, and I will always be there for my kids, irregardless.
I think our children recognize more than we ever give them credit for. Even though that he wasn't abusive to them and was he was almost stealth-like in his abuse towards you. I'd like to give him credit and say because he didn't want to do it in front of the kids, but I don't want to give what word scumbag. I'm sorry. I don't want to give a scumbag any credit for anything, but they knew those things. Yeah. So,
Hello, sir.
hello, sir.
Hi, Derek Brown.
It's my
Hello, Mr.
husband.
Brown. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to say thank you very much for giving her this opportunity.
Well, you betcha. And
Yes,
thank
sir.
you. And thank you by for standing by her side.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
All right, you have a good one. I just want to say hello and thanks. And sir, I appreciate you.
Thank you. Well, we want to sell some books. That's what we want to do here. Your
Yes, sir.
books are on Amazon
Amazon and Barnes and Noble
and on Audible.
and Audible. Yes, I almost forgot. Very important. And let me tell you, the Audible process, the lady that I had read it, she is also a radio talk show host for our local radio station here. And I've actually known her for years. So when I told her about my books, she was like, absolutely. She had me on the radio station and, you know, promoting my books. I have an event coming up this month, actually in October 19th. It's a domestic violence awareness event, and it's basically letting members of the, you know, our local community know what resources are out there. And something else recently has happened that I found out about. There is an it's called the Underground Railroad, and it's for domestic violence current victims. And it's a whole group that helps people navigate through the legal system, you know, if they have to, because unfortunately the abusers still have rights to the kids and all that, but they help you navigate through that process and help you get out. Like if you need to get out, you can basically call this number and they'll send you a bus ticket or whatever it takes to get you out of that situation.
The Underground Railroad.
Unfortunately,
That's a message that people have to hear. Lily, I know that right now there are young women out there in abusive relationships that they believe from the bottom of their heart that there's no way out.
right. And that's part of the reason why, you know, I ended up staying so long, because I didn't know what help was out there. You know, if somebody would have said to me, hey, there is hope, you know, it could have been a listening ear. Like if a woman would have said to me, or even a man, like, I'm here for you. I didn't have that, you know, so I was alone. But these books, I poured my heart and soul into these books. And it's made me into the woman that I am today. I wish I would have gotten out a lot sooner, but it is what it is. Can't cry over spilt milk, as they say. I've done a couple of book signings at Barnes and Noble, and I'm getting a lot of followers on TikTok. I sent one of my books to a lady in the UK because she followed me on TikTok, and she ended up passing it around in England. So my book is floating around England too.
That's really cool. So on TikTok, Like I said, I'm going to put for our listeners, I'm going to put links to your books
Awesome.
On Amazon and on Audible. But we want to get to
Barnes and Noble. Don't forget Barnes and Noble.
Barnes and Noble. And we want to get them looking at your TikTok too.
Yep. On TikTok, I am lily.tesla and the number 7. Yep. I'm actually going to put it here in the chat. I don't know if you'll be able to access this later, but I'll put it here in the chat.
I will be able to. So I've avoided one word, Lily, during this, during our time together tonight. And I had it written in my notes. And I want to ask you this, because again, I know people that are in the situation that you're in, and love is what I've been told. I love him.
Yeah.
And you don't have to answer. Our listeners can't see your face right now, but I can. And you can tell me, Jim, the interview's over. Did you love him?
I did. I loved both of them in different ways. I mean, I'll always be grateful because they're the father of my kids. I wouldn't have my kids if it weren't for them. I just wish they would have thought of me and made better choices. You know, my first husband, I can remember, you know, arguing with him, pleading with him, please stop the drinking. And he just wouldn't listen. And now he's serving 50 to life. He's got another 15 years to go to maybe get parole, you know? And I was, you know, he was never a father to his daughter. He missed out on his whole life. He was 20 when he got locked up, you know? So, you know, I think back to that. And then my second husband, where they say karma does not forget an address. It's true. He passed away. He had a heart attack in the bathroom, got up first thing in the morning. That never came out. The police, okay, this was in Florida, contacted me because, of course, I was still on his phone and everything. They shipped me his phone because that was the only, I guess, piece of evidence or whatever, because his family. And that's the other thing. I had to navigate all the funeral arrangements. I had to do all that.
Were you legally divorced by that time?
Oh, yeah. This was only like 3 years ago, maybe.
Right.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I take that back. It was a year ago. Yeah, it's only been a year since he passed. You know, but I had to navigate all that. So long story short, the police sent me the phone, right? So of course, the hacker that I am, I went in it because he's a creature of habit. Like, same password, same, you know. So I went through it and he was catfished really, really bad by some women. And he was just sending them money. And I hear him, like, I saw video clips of him begging, like, please be real. Like, I can't take this anymore. And I'm like, and I'm just looking at my, I was like, do you see? God don't like ugly.
So that's the karma you're referring to.
Yes, that's the karma. So he died alone. The girl that he left me for left him for somebody else. So of course, you know, he came crying to me to pick up the pieces, which I did. Because again, that fear is real. I mean, even after he passed, when his family was hounding me to help them make the funeral arrangements and all that nonsense, just seeing his last name come across my phone was triggering. And it was to the point where I sat down, I talked to his brother. I said, listen, I can't do this. I'm sorry, but I can't talk to you. Because I can't, it was giving me flashbacks, like really bad. And out of respect from my daughter and the family, I went to the Awake. And you know what they did? His apartment was filled with pictures of me and the kids. So when I walked into the Awake, our whole life was plastered. It was millions of pictures of him and me and the kids. And I was just like, I can't, you know, he died regretting, according to his brother, he died regretting the way he treated me. Too late.
Someone once said, it's not who takes you to the dance, it's who you leave the dance with.
Yeah.
Now you got Mr. Brown.
Yep. I sure do. But read both books. Definitely read the Surviving the Nightmare first and then the Recovery Years. Oh, and recovery takes, I've been out 10 years.
It's ongoing. Yeah, you told me that earlier, 10 years. Congratulations on that. But it's not like 10 years and it's over. It's ongoing. All right, my prayers for you that you continue that march, you continue to help people. And I usually don't pray that you sell books, but I'll throw that one in too. Sell some books.
It makes me feel good now that I can actually talk about it and, you know, help somebody else out. You know, I've been the listening ear for other people. You know, the whole Me Too thing is real. You know, there's so many people that you would never think of that deal with that, you know, and men don't realize, like they'll say, oh, but I don't hit her. Okay. But what's your tone like? You know, and, you know, that's just as hard to live with as the physical abuse. You know, I used to always say, I'd rather be hit than be talked disrespectfully or rude to, because those words don't leave. They replay in your head over and over again. Bruises heal. The words, they stay with you. You know, and that's the hardest part. Therapy helped. I saw a therapist for a bit, and that helps. And I check in every now and then. The domestic violence hotline is always there to listen, you know, because survivors need just as much support as current victims.
Yes, no doubt about that. So the old rhyme of sticks and stones might break my bones, but words will never hurt me, carries very little truth.
Correct.
Listen, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We're going to sell some books. I'm going to put everything up on Amazon for you.
I appreciate the opportunity of coming here and talking to you.
You betcha.
I appreciate it.
Well, that was my interview with Lily Tesla, the author of Surviving the Nightmare and Living Without Fear. Her books are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and on Audible. I will put links to all of her books, all of her works, in the show notes. I also want to include in the show notes a link to a site where young women, or men, I suppose, that are going through domestic violence, where you can get help. You heard her story, and for 30 years she went through it with very little help. I think today the world has maybe changed somewhat, and the good old boys don't walk away from these situations anymore. At least I hope not. And I know that there are places out there that you can get help. And if you're listening to this and you're in that situation, or if you're listening to this and you know someone in a situation that is dangerous, that is violent, then they need help. Maybe you be the one that makes the phone call for them. You see something, you say something, right? Well, thank you again, Lily, for sharing your story with us tonight. God bless you, and God bless your family. Keep writing. Keep moving forward. I'm going to get on out of here now, guys. Keep an eye out for me. I'm the one walking down the highway with a book in his hand.